All right, good morning everyone. Thank you for being here. My name is Amanda Actman, and I'm speaking on human action and behavioralism. Can these two be reconciled? Now, the Austrian school, as we've been discussing, has a focus on human action. This is the great intellectual tradition coming from the school of Salamanca, the Spanish scholastics, all the way through Menger to Mises and Hayek, and it's grounded in the fundamental principle that humans act. This is axiomatic within the Austrian school. And human action, according to Mises, is essentially purposeful behavior. That's his definition at the outset of human action. So the action of persons, when it's free and spontaneous, is unpredictable, as Francois was saying. Because persons act, preferences cannot be calculated. And I argue that the trend within Austrian economics to move toward behavioralism and particularly experimental economics is a departure from the fundamental principles of human action within the Austrian school. And this matters because it is a threat to human liberty. So my purpose is to persuade you first that this debate is interesting, that the behavioralists and the experimentalists versus the praxeologists and the philosophers are in an interesting debate that matters not only for economics, but for the age-old debate between to what extent can the social sciences and should the social sciences, if at all, imitate or use the same methodologies as the natural sciences. And I argue that they need to be distinct. This matters for sweeping studies within the humanities. And we can wonder about what it means to be acting persons with these increasing studies being done. What is the interplay between our reason and our will, between knowledge and our preferences, and how can our asking of these questions help to promote human freedom rather than paternalistic policies? And I think that it's with the rise of experimental economics that we come to see more and more of an emphasis on human beings as calculators rather than actors, and that this is a threat to human liberty, because when the results of these studies are extrapolated within society, more knowledge than we can possibly have, as Hayek has argued in the past, is ascertained. And this is dangerous for public policy and for our personal liberty. So why did I get interested in this? Well, last year, around this time, I attended a Liberty Fund conference co-sponsored with the Institute for Humane Studies, and the topic was spontaneous orders and experimental economics. What struck me about this conference is we assembled about 15 persons and a facilitator to read some classical economics or political philosophy on the one hand, and some experimental economics on the other hand. But we didn't just read experimental studies, we participated in them. We all had computers, 15 computers at the conference, and each person participated in trading games, property rights games, cooperation games that we had read about. And the aim for the conference was to see to what extent, if at all, do the political philosophical and classical economic theories of persons like Adam Smith, David Hume, and Friedrich Hayek help us to understand the results that the experimentalists within the last 10 years or so, mainly, those were the studies we were reading, the studies of Vernon Smith and Bart Wilson at Chapman University. And these are the leading experimental economists who have been doing these studies. And in fact, it was Bart Wilson who facilitated the seminar and walked us through these studies. So I found it very interesting to see, do we act the way that we behave, or do we behave the way that we're said to act? As soon as we started reading the literature, what we were all struck by is the different language from classical economics and philosophy compared to the experimental economics. So for example, in the experimental and behavioral studies, we found words like behavior, forces, elements, design, institutions, preferences, and utility. And in Hume and Smith and Hayek, we found words like action, conduct, manner, rules, nature, affections, and justice. It seemed like these two camps are speaking in radically and fundamentally different languages, and yet about the very same subject matter. This is interesting, and I found there was a strikingly similar contrast in emphasis between the classical economists and the philosophers who focused on purposive action as willful and intentional versus the behavioralists and experimentalists who focused on rationality as their key starting point, and then usually on the basis of some judgments or calculations of efficiency or utility. These are the defining characteristics of their understanding of rationality. So these seem to be some preliminary clues, this tension in our language existing between persons who take the praxeological human action approach versus the behavioral approach. So as I said, Mises begins human action defining human action as purposive behavior. And the emphasis is on that adjective modifying the word behavior. What does he mean by purposive? And are the kinds of studies across experimental economics or using chimpanzees capturing anything about what purposive behavior means? Or is animal behavior perhaps different? So the aim for Mises was to distinguish human action as purposive from the seeming orientedness or even teleology found within nature and with living biology that seems to tend toward ends without willfulness. So that's why the centrality in the Austrian school is initially on human willfulness and intentionality, not on rationality. And Mises said, right in Human Action as well, that there is an emphasis, an overemphasis on rationality. He said, it is true that some philosophers were ready to overrate the power of human reason. And that's certainly true within a democracy. So praxeology, he says, is indifferent to the ultimate goals of human action. Mises considers economics to be very limited. It is a science concerned with means, not with ends, if it is to be about human liberty. But in our own experiments at this conference, most of the participants would judge, and even the experimentalists in their studies, would judge persons as acting against their rational self-interest or not maximizing utility very well, and so on. So these responses confirm what Mises and Hayek identify as our modern scientistic and positivistic prejudices, which have infiltrated or which we have embraced so readily within the social sciences and which are threatening a more humane approach to these disciplines. So the emphasis, first, in a study called Sustaining Cooperation in Trust Games, one of the studies that we evaluated, the authors argue it is about what people do who, contrary to their immediate game-theoretic self-interest, initiate or reciprocate cooperation, and who find themselves in an environment with other similarly disposed people. Does cooperation build, or does it deteriorate? So the emphasis on that study, then, is about outcomes, specifically the outcome of cooperation. And the use of the word build suggests that cooperation can and is being quantified to some measurable metric that we should take to note. And Vernon Smith, in his economic experiments involving trust games, he's constantly perplexed at how humans interact, and he's always saying that he finds these results remarkable. You can watch some excellent videos of Bart Wilson and Vernon Smith through Learn Liberty and Reason TV on YouTube, which I'd highly recommend if this is interesting to you. And he gives an example and says, you can't understand how people cooperate by game theory. You need Adam Smith's theory of moral sentiments. We need some more humane approach. We can't account for these responses that humans have. Now, Mises is saying, but you see, human action is always rational, if by rational we mean that with agency, humans tend toward their preferences. And that's what he says purposive behavior is. It's willfulness plus agency. That might mean you make really stupid decisions and arrive at really inefficient outcomes, but the purposive behavior is willful and requires agency, and that's how you get there. He's not very interested in the outcomes, and that's not moral relativism, that is his economic subjectivism, and there's an important distinction there too. So, considering the meaning of purposive behavior, it's worthwhile, I thought, to go back and trace from the Austrians to the school of Salamanca to even Thomas Aquinas, where many of these thinkers are getting their anthropology of the human person. And Thomas Aquinas, in his Summa, I think Mises is actually echoing him just a little bit differently. In Aquinas answers the question whether intention is an act of the intellect or the will. And he says, I answer that intention, as the very word denotes, signifies to tend to something. Now, both the action of the mover and the movement of the thing moved tend to something, but that the movement of the thing moved tends to anything is due to the action. Okay. Consequently, intention belongs first and principally to that which moves the end. So now the will moves all the other powers of the soul to the end. Wherefore, it is evident that intention, properly speaking, is an act of the will. Now, this is interesting because it's an argument against the experimentalists and the behavioralists for the centrality in economics on willfulness, not rationality. And yet, consistently in the studies, we find the emphasis on, are people maximizing utility? Are they being efficient? Will this be a good allocation of scarce resources within an economy? Will they create institutions that involve private property rights when they have the choice to betray private property rights and to steal? It's about efficiency rather than human freedom. But to the credit of the experimentalists, there are some studies in which they take intention-based approaches to complement their outcome-based models. Still, it seems to me that the outcome-based models eclipse the intention-based approaches. And I think that human willfulness, the nature of intentionality, the meaning of purposive action, and the centrality of means rather than ends to economics, and praxeology in particular, constitute the major failure of experimentalists to grasp the fundamental questions that underpin the phenomena that we're studying, which are human beings. So such a humane approach to action serves to expose the unpredictability and nuance of it, but this is challenging because when we expose the nuance and unpredictability of human action, economics becomes less useful. And experimentalists, like everyone else, want to be useful. And so we find these experimental economists, after they finish their experiments in their labs with the undergraduates who they pay to take these tests, which is great, I'm sure they're popular on their campuses for hiring them for all these studies, then they work at Federal Trade Commissions, or then they speak to the public about the housing bubble. Then they make predictions and forecasts. Usually the predictions are about things that have already happened. They're not very long-term predictions because that's dangerous, and they know that they can't possibly predict. The economy is too complex, and yet how do economists stay relevant? Hayek says in his Nobel lecture, look at this new prestige our discipline has found. Economists are now receiving Nobel Prizes, and Vernon Smith was a Nobel laureate. The danger of that, Hayek said, accepting his Nobel speech, is that we will provide more answers because the public is asking for them than we are capable. Now, how do we withstand that temptation to provide answers to which we cannot possibly know the answers, but when there is such high pressure from departments to be productive, from society to be influential, and from all other angles to basically give answers to these questions about the economy? So, prediction is a tough problem. We are tempted to make predictions, and throughout this research I kind of wonder, well, why didn't Hayek get killed by these economists, like Socrates got killed by the Athenians for saying, really, I don't know anything, we have very limited knowledge, our discipline is not all-encompassing. They could have killed him just like Socrates was killed by his fellow citizens, but they didn't. And I think it's because both Mises and Hayek weave all sorts of concessions to some purposes for experimental economics, some purposes for analyzing behavior. But they're always cautioning and warning against going off the deep end, which is the tendency. But because they allow some of it, they remain in the at least fringe club, which we'll, we can say. So are the experimentalists really trying to predict behavior, or is this kind of a not a legitimate critique? Well, I think Bart said explicitly that he is trying to predict. He said, "I'm somebody who builds little worlds in a laboratory. And so, instead of building economic knowledge from first principles, I'm building it through observation. Using controlled confines, the laboratory, to test and predict how people behave." To test and predict how people behave. Bart Wilson. Vernon Smith has very similar statements about the purpose of economic theories being to serve some predictability. And this is right through their Economic Science Institute, and the Economic Science Institute is flourishing because it's an attractive thing. You go and you do paid studies, it's a reason to hire research assistants, it's a reason to be relevant, and it's a way for Austrians to enter into the mathematical, statistical modeling that is the core of modern economics in some way, although I think it is yielding to tendencies within these disciplines to which we should not yield, and which the founders of Austrian economics would be ashamed of us yielding to. Mises also says that praxeological prediction is basically a fiction. He says that praxeological knowledge that can really predict with some certainty is not possible because there is neither constancy nor consistency in constancy nor continuity in the valuations and in the formation of exchange ratios between various commodities. Every new datum brings about a reshuffling of the whole price structure. That's intense and can't be ignored. What is the answer of the experimentalists to every single datum of experience changing the market for human beings? So that's why he says, what we may now call its methods unsatisfactory, and the positivists may arrogantly scorn it, but such arbitrary judgments must not and cannot obscure the fact that understanding is the only appropriate method in dealing with the uncertainty of future conditions. Hayek says the same thing in his Nobel lecture when he says, the best that we can do is mere pattern predictions. We cannot be predicting prices. We can predict patterns and trends. But as soon as the graph has numbers next to it, that is a fatal conceit. That is a conceit of knowledge. So these obstacles are missing factors when you are an experimentalist, because as Bart Wilson says, he skips the first principles and begins with empirical observation. But I think we can challenge this methodology. Testing the philosophers and classical economists against the experimentalists is the thing to do, which is why I argue for a conversation between the two camps and why everyone should be talking about this, even outside of other disciplines. So one question that comes to mind is, if there's so much that can be learned from classical economists like David Hume and Adam Smith and even earlier economists about human nature, and the experimentalists are saying, oh, but we're setting out to prove the classical economists right, which is what they often say, then how did the classical economists come up with it? Before statistics and computer games and simulations and studies, how did they come up with such penetrating insights into human nature and the human condition before we had experimental economics? I think that's at least worth asking. So why do they do it? Why do experimental economics flourish? For the very reason that Hayek said, because economists will be tempted, and because our primary attention should be on willfulness. We want to be more mainstream. We want to have answers. We need public intellectuals to be on the news to explain an economic crisis. This is the temptation. And yet we need to be very on guard against it, because it can undermine the emphasis on human will, which should be at the core of the Austrian school anthropology of the human person. And one quotation that struck me very, very early on was that the fundamental problem of socialism was anthropological in nature. That means it got the human person wrong. And if we skip ahead to empirical observation and get the human person wrong, then we will return to making mistakes about the economy, to claiming that we know more than we possibly can, and ultimately to undermining the human freedom that the Austrian school is supposed to protect and celebrate.
We have a couple of minutes left for questions, so if anybody would like to ask something,